Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, I am joined by someone who I've been trying to get on the show for 11 years, finally was successful. I've had Gary Vaynerchuk on the show, the founder of Dollar Shave Club, you know, the founders of Klaviyo. And this guest was harder than all of those to get on the mic. It's my wife. She was joining me. Took me 500 plus episodes, but it was worth the wait. And she joined me today to do a recap of our family gap year. About, as many of you know, been taking the last 12 months to do a gap year with the family, to travel, to recharge, to take a sabbatical. And that is coming to a very quick close here in the next couple of weeks. And so wanted to have her on. We're on the road wrapping up some of our travels with our family. And we talk about some of our highlights from the trip, what went well, what was hard, thoughts on traveling with kids. She asked me some questions about the business, how that went, you know, what I learned about the business. I'm going to carry over into the kind of the regular work schedule, which is coming back up. It's kind of a debrief on doing a gap year and our thoughts and advice for people that might be considering as well. So hope you enjoy it. I had a lot of fun. She's my favorite person in the world. And hope you enjoy listening and learning from her as much as I did. Let's get into it. Hey, cheers. We are almost all the way through and enjoying some really amazing German beer after some other really amazing German beer earlier tonight. Thank you for doing this. I know, like I mentioned at the very top of the episode, you were probably the most elusive and hard to track down guest I've ever had on the show. So I appreciate you doing it. So, and I may or may not have been poured you one last little nightcap here to help facilitate the discussion.
You're playing me with alcohol?
Not too badly, but just a little bit. We have a ton to talk about, or I want to talk about. And I'm kind of excited to do this because it's been such a fun, amazing, at times hard year. But what do you think of Munich before we like dive into all the nitty-gritty stuff?
Munich has been one of my favorite cities in Europe, actually. Beautiful, lots going on.
Yeah.
The river was amazing. Kids loved it. I think what made it really special was just having a local guide to show us around. It was really neat that Antia and James got to show us around, and they knew all the great places to see, and we did it in traditional German style very efficiently. It was great.
Yes. Keep going, firstaid.com. Check them out. Thank you, Antia and James, and especially Antia, who kind of spent hours walking with us and four children with one of her kids through the city. Yeah, I agree. Munich is really cool. It's, I was telling you earlier tonight, I don't know how all Germans aren't like 450 pounds because they have amazing beer.
And pretzels.
Pretzels, delicious meats. Yeah, it's like the, I don't like Hefes. We were talking the first night we went out and had beer. Mm. And normally I don't like Hefeweizens. And the beer here, it's so funny when you travel because you find out that some of the stereotypes, not all stereotypes are true, but some stereotypes are very true. And great beer in Germany is the thing.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't even like beer that much. And you ordered
beer
tonight.
Yeah. I'm not really usually a beer person, but the German beer is hard to beat.
Yeah.
So
it's really good. So table a little bit for this. Why do you think we did this gap year for people who don't know? I did a episode, kind of a halfway through the year episode. But what would you say when I came to you, you know, 3 years ago and rolled this crazy idea? What do you think the whole goal of this whole year was?
Traveling or the whole gap year? Oh, I mean, there are a lot of goals kind of rolled up into one, but yeah. Bringing our kids with us on the adventure, not that they're adventure deprived by any means, but showing them the rest of the world. I think it's really cool to experience it through their eyes.
Yeah.
It was also kind of the right timing for them age-wise. And yeah, I just think it's one of those things where you build these memories that you'll never regret doing it. Your kids will remember it for the rest of their lives. And us too, hopefully.
Yeah. Our oldest daughter is just getting ready to go into middle school. And so we felt like this was the time to do it because it's kind of brutal to pull kids out of school, especially in like middle school and high school. So I felt like we had this window to do it. And so we started planning for this 2 or 3 years ago. And so quick overview of the itinerary was we spent probably a third of the year traveling, a third of the year in Montana, and a third of the year in Tucson. For the traveling section, we had one section in Asia where we went to Japan, Philippines, Singapore, and Hawaii. And then the Europe section, which we're on now.
Hawaii is not in Asia.
Hawaii is not in Asia. En route, thank you for the clarification. Actually, do you know what continent? Claire asked me this today. What continent is Greenland part of? Do you know? You're gonna bust my chops for Asia.
I feel like I should say Asia because that triggered your memory.
Okay, well, which one, what is it? I'm gonna put you on the record for saying we're
Greenland. Sorry, I'm enjoying my beer. Go ahead.
We'll get you. We'll have to, a few more steps, I'll ask you again. North America, for the record. At least according to ChatGPT. And then the Europe section of the trip, which I would say, you know, we're both talking about, well, we'll get into this, but the Euro section was where we did some sailing with a good friend of mine from high school who was the captain. So we were able to do that really, really reasonably. We hiked in Portugal for a week.
Yeah, a lot of hiking.
Yeah, which was awesome. Went to Paris. I did like a 36-hour whirlwind trip in Paris and Germany. And we're going to finish up in Italy seeing a good friend. So that's kind of the quick overview of it. We were homeschooling the whole time, which we'll get into. We were homeschooling the whole time. You maybe did more of the hours. I will give you that. I maybe had more of the difficult assignments with certain children. It went crazy fast. That's a good like segue. Responsibilities. I think we have different maybe ideas of how our responsibilities. What would you say our responsibilities were for across the gap year with family, travel, logistics, all that stuff?
Ooh, I feel like they shifted a little bit over time, but yeah. I think, yeah, as you mentioned, I probably shouldered most of the homeschooling tasks. You were definitely the logistics travel planner. Mm-hmm. And I tried to help out where I could, but I think that's definitely a strength of yours. Yeah. And then we kind of tag teamed just getting the kids around and keeping them alive on the road.
Gosh.
And teaching them on the road.
It was like two full-time parents to keep them from having the Japanese throw us out. We rolled through Tokyo. Because American kids are so loud and Japanese kids, just Japanese in general, are very calm and quiet. And we just like hit the city like just an explosion the first week. Yeah, I'd say that's fair. As logistics, I'm still doing some work stuff. The homeschooling, I am guilty. I think you had much more realistic expectations about homeschool than I did.
Fair.
Yes. We rolled in. I thought it was like, ah, so easy, an hour a day. And it would have been an hour a day. In terms of getting stuff done, if the kids would just sit down and do their stuff.
I think your idea of homeschooling was what's called unschooling. You don't really just kind of let them and learn from life.
No, I wasn't on the full take your shoes off, you know, play the ukulele and just kind of run through the forest like a bunch of hippies. But it was harder than I expected.
Yeah. If you do it intentionally, yes.
Yeah, it was harder. Best parts. What was the best part of the year, you think, for you?
I mean, I really liked the travel parts.
Yeah.
Those were my favorite. Although I did enjoy skiing in Montana because we hadn't done that in a while.
Yeah.
But I still think the actual on-the-ground travel was the most fun for me.
Did you have a favorite section or two?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Japan and Singapore. Europe has been really fun. I think we learned from Asia. Not that there was anything wrong with that travel plan, but we hit a lot of cities there. And we really quickly realized we have very much outdoor country kids. And in the city, there's a little bit of a time limit for them on how much they enjoy that.
Yes.
So for Europe, we took some cues from the kids and baked in some adventures like hiking the Portuguese Fisherman's Trail and sailing and things where it was more active and where they could be in the country and kind of be in nature.
Yeah.
In the Black Forest in Germany in particular, and they just loved that. And it was a lot easier and less stressful for us.
Well, I think it wasn't just they enjoyed it more. We enjoyed it more.
Yeah.
Because I remember being in Asia and just at one point just losing, kind of flipping out. Mm-hmm. Should I ever do a whole lot? Hopefully. I mean, I remember one day I just kind of lost it because our kids had been fighting a lot. And because it was just because they were smashed into a really urban city environment.
Small spaces. Say, it's like Tokyo. Everything is really small. We're a family of five, which is large for Tokyo.
Yeah.
That's like showing up with, a pack of 12 pretty much.
We got literally laughed out of restaurants in Japan.
They're like five tables for five?
No.
Haha. No.
But yeah, being in places with more room was so helpful for us too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it would depend on the kids. Like if your kids grew up in a city environment and they're very comfortable there and, you know, they enjoy trailing along to museums and things like that, it could be really fun. But I think
I think that's like 2% of the kids.
I don't know. I think there are definitely kids who are probably more mellow than ours, but ours are are enjoy being outside. So I think the more we scheduled outdoor activities, the better it seemed to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd agree. I feel like the best part for me was, I would say, travel. We'll get into how well you thought I actually unplugged from work in a minute here. But I felt like the time I was able to do that the best was on the road.
Agreed.
Yeah. Because when we were at home, mm-hmm. well, I mean, this is a great segue for it.
Yeah.
My goal coming into this was to work one day a week. How do you think I did on that goal?
Are we talking about on the road or at home?
Just kind of overall, both.
Ooh. Ooh. At home brings down your average. You did really well on the road at that.
Yeah.
I think less so at home. I think you just, it's so much easier when you're in that familiar environment to get sucked into work.
Yeah.
And I think that happened more than you probably wanted it to. Definitely more than I wanted it to, but for you too.
Yeah, I was surprised that I think at home, when I had the ability to work, it was easy to justify working. Mm-hmm. When you're on the road and you don't have the time, or you only have time on trains, or, you know, like it is 10 o'clock. We just barely got the kids down 20 minutes ago.
Don't judge.
Right? Yeah. I mean, they're probably going to burst through the door here with some ridiculous thing in a couple minutes. And you don't have time with kids at home, but you definitely don't have time when you're on the road very much.
Yeah.
Anyway, so getting back to one of the best parts for me was the travel portion, mm-hmm. but also because it did help me. One of the big things I want that's a huge value for me is being able to build a life and a business, not just one or the other, like a rich life outside of your work. And I think one of the big reasons that's a value for me is because I struggle with it to do that, which is why I'm trying to prioritize it. But I struggle with it like anyone else.
It's almost like forcing yourself to do it by traveling.
Yeah. Yeah. With traveling, the nice thing about it is like it makes it, you have to do it.
Right.
Right? You know, because we're in this place, we're trying to take advantage of it. And it's this forcing mechanism for helping you triage. Like when we were on the train the other day, I had like 2.5 hours to get a ton of stuff done.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of stuff done.
Well, and also we have so many things to do with logistics of the actual traveling. And we're moving from place to place that you don't even have time to work most of the time.
Yeah,
or if you wanted to, like we just, it's hard to squeeze it in.
Yeah.
Compared to being at home.
Yeah. And it was really good to be able to unplug. Anyone listening that has a business understands going on vacation and having a difficult time unplugging. Like it's just, unless you're insanely disciplined about it, it's often hard to do. You're often thinking about work, or you're on your phone, or you're doing stuff. And I think between traveling with 3 kids internationally and the time difference helps too, because you know, there's not constant, you know, instant replies to your team. You can't always talk to them, connect with them. Feeling the ability to kind of wind down a little bit and recharge deeply. And even on my, I've got one of these health trackers, I could notice the recovery scores increase when I was traveling abroad and working less for like, you know, anywhere from a month or two, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. And also just time with, like, I think memories, apart from the other thing was memories with the kids. Like we have so many fun memories.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any, and I don't know, you don't have to share all the personal things, but do you have an anecdote or two of like really fun memories from this trip that you'll remember?
I mean, I think you and I both have our own personal memories, but I think for me, it's really cool to watch your kids build memories. Like I know that our oldest, Claire, really loves Japan, and she has a couple of memories, like one where she climbed up into a tree to help this boy get down his badminton birdie, and she got it out, and everybody in the park was cheering, and nobody could really communicate, but it was just a really sweet memory, and she'll always carry that with her.
Yeah.
And yeah, just seeing your kids build these memories. We also had the kids journaling on the road, and they would journal about some of these things, and it was so fun to watch them lock in some of this stuff. And I really hope that they go back through and read these journals when they're much older. And hopefully they'll remember it, but then they can refresh their memory with the journals.
It's funny to see the things that kids love, right? Like,
totally.
We did a lot of really fun and cool things. And I would say, when I asked the kids today what their favorite part of the whole trip was, I think 2 out of 3, maybe it was 3 out of 3, answered picking huckleberries next to the train station.
Blackberries, excuse me. Yeah.
So picking blackberries next to the train station because we were in this little rural town in Germany and we got to the train station and there's this huge, you know.
Wild blackberry patch, huge, and just laden just, with berries. And the kids
ran around like somebody was just dumping $100 bills.
It was like Christmas morning like for Christmas. Them. Not even joking.
And then they all looked like they had just, been, were axe murderers, right? Just red everywhere. Their hand looked like they had slaughtered a goat.
They loved it.
But yeah, that was, it was cool. It was
that also, took a dark turn.
A little bit. Welcome to the podcast. It was also cool seeing how different kids, especially one of our kids that was a little more timid around people and cities.
Crowds, I would say.
Yeah. They still don't love crowds, but I feel like they've been able to, they're able to navigate that part of the world so much better than they were a year ago.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Even the second trip, the second leg of the trip has been, we talked about it. That it's been a lot better.
Yeah. Hardest part of the year. Because it was a really good year, but there were a few moments for me where I was just like, you and I, we love it. Well, I'll say this for my part. Hardest part of the year.
I think there were a couple that were just challenges. You know, our kids have been in public school up until this year. So getting thrown into homeschooling for a year, there's a lot to learn. There's a learning curve. And I probably was overly concerned about doing it well and doing it right. Andrew's laughing at me because I wanted to make sure they, you know, were on top of everything. And
yeah.
A lot of work goes into that, especially when you have three kids at different levels. So homeschooling was just, you know, learning new things and trying to like get that to work well. Getting into routine was hard.
Mm-hmm. I remember the first week, after the first week you and I homeschooled, which I started out stronger. I got weaker over time.
Bait and switch, guys. Bait and switch. No, I'm just kidding.
I remember after the first week, just being like, oh my gosh, like 4 hours of my day are just gone every day. It was, yeah. Anyway, I remember it that acutely.
I mean, I think it went relatively well and we were really lucky to have good friends who gave us a ton of good resources and we got a lot of insider knowledge from people who've been doing it for a while. So, you know, I'm really thankful for that because I think had I not had that, it would have been overwhelming.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was hard. And then I think the other thing that's hard is kind of like my favorite part and my least favorite part, two sides of the same coin. You get to spend a lot of time with your family and your kids, and that's lovely.
And your husband.
And your husband. This is lovely. And you love it. But when you're traveling with them 24/7 and then homeschooling them and then, you know, you're with them a lot. So I feel like the thing that was hardest for me is sometimes I would want some time alone. And it's really hard to do that, especially when you're traveling because you don't have babysitters, you don't have grandparents, you're just on the road. And I'm sure there are probably services you could find online to do that. But I don't know, I'm a little hesitant with people that aren't heavily vetted. So regardless, it was just hard to sneak away and find time to yourself.
You didn't exactly go for, well, for the babysitter in Portugal who didn't speak English. You weren't really on board with that.
Listen, seems like a basic requirement. Speaks the same language as your kids.
That was something I struggled with as well, but I think less so because there were definitely times where I was working and it would be work, but I'd be able to kind of get that recharge, get that time alone, even if it was working and I was doing stuff. And also, I think you are a more selfless person than I am.
And so thanks.
100%, you know that. Kids would definitely come on the podcast and attest to that. And I'm pretty good about, like, if I feel like I need something, like, just making it happen. Mm-hmm. And you're a little more reticent sometimes to just do that.
True.
Yeah. I see you finished your beer. You're looking more relaxed.
I'm feeling more relaxed.
Good.
Thanks.
Good. I'm sure it's just my very natural podcasting style.
Very natural.
Yeah. Cuddling up to you on the couch. So.
I have some questions for you, though.
Yeah.
I am curious why you think you worked more than you thought you would this gap year.
I think a couple things. I've mentioned this before, but I think I think I'm alone in this, in that as an entrepreneur, you always think your business is just going to fall apart and you're going to come in one day and it's going to be in flames. I've told you this before.
Mm.
And I think that putting time in towards something is something you can do discreetly to make it feel like you're working against that. If that makes sense. I think that's part of it. I think that's always there. There was still a lot of stuff that we were doing. Not a lot, but a meaningful amount of stuff we were doing. Like we were relaunching the brand. We're doing a whole rebrand of ECF, which took a meaningful amount of time. There's stuff like, hey, you've got taxes that are coming up that you've got to go through. There were some things with the team. My team did a phenomenal job. A huge thank you, by the way, to Dana, to Patrick, to Audrey, to Cheryl, to Mariella. The team did an amazing job of covering for me. They just did awesome. So I'm super lucky to work with such amazing people. So thank you, team. You rocked it. But trying to provide guidance on certain things. I mean, even though I was checked out much more than normal, I still wasn't completely off the map. So that was part of it. Part of it was I wanted, there's still the podcast that was happening. And I think there's a lot of things also in that I just underestimated how much stuff there was to do. And also that I wanted, like, I put a schedule together probably the second half of the gap year. And a lot of it was things I wanted to do to learn and recharge, like AI and storytelling was the thing I was trying to do. So I think that's a few of the reasons.
How do you think you did on the things you wanted to do?
Time with kids, great. The bait and switch on homeschooling, nailed it. I totally nailed it. I love you. I think the storytelling, I would give myself a 5 out of 10. I did start to dive into it, started doing some of the Forge What Matters sections, and I'm excited to pick that back up this fall. Music, I had wanted to play a lot more music. I'd give myself a 1 out of 10. I almost did nothing, which is really sad because I desperately wanted to do that. Learning AI, I'd give myself a 3 out of 10 or 4 out of 10.
You taught ChatGPT pretty successfully to some of our kids.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, taught them how to use it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's like the easiest thing in the world that you press a button and talk to it, right?
I know, but they're creating all sorts of images on it, and they're it's pretty amazing.
They are. It has been cool to see them dive in and start to use it in fun, interesting ways. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's ridiculous ways, but sometimes it's like, tell me a story about cats and rainbows and ice cream, and it's a little ridiculous, but sometimes it's...
I feel a little bit weird, but I feel like there's going to be a point where they're going to start asking ChatGPT instead of parents, and that's going to be a really sad day.
Yeah. I feel like that's a whole different conversation, but yes, I agree. That is going to be a sad day.
Like, no.
So I would give myself, depending on from great to terrible on the goals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it hard to work less, even though you were maybe working more than you thought, but was it difficult to pull back?
Yeah, I think so. It was, because even when I was working less, even though I didn't work to the extent I wanted to, because I think I had this idea in my brain of like, I'd work one day a week discreetly, and then I'd have 4 days to like just do all the other things that would become amazing guitarist, invest heavily in the kids, which I did to some extent, you know, become a really great storyteller, all these things. And that, even though I didn't have as much time as I thought, 4 days, I was still working, you know, depending on the week, anywhere from probably 3-ish days a week, which still is a really great week for people. It's a phenomenal week. But it was hard to work less because it was very easy. Sometimes motion, you feel good when you're just in motion, even if it's not being productive, or even it's just kind of a soothing thing. And again, going back to the entrepreneurial concept of like, if I'm not doing something, my business is struggling. I think that was one of the great things that came out of this year is we made some great investments, long-term investments in the business. We rebranded. We've been doing some really cool stuff with AI. We had some events, but I wouldn't say it was a big growth year. It was not a growth year. It was definitely a maintenance year on the growth front. I feel like in the company, I'm the one who drives, or I feel I am the one who's responsible for marketing and growth. But I also realized I wasn't that critical to the business, which was a humbling thing on one side, but also a really great thing as well. So that was really cool to see. But I think to your question, was it hard? Yes, it was hard to work less. Because even if you're working less, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be amazingly productive with the time you have. You still have to have the discipline to do that. And that feeling of, if I'm not working, my business is going to dry up and blow away in the wind, doesn't go away. So
yeah. And I think that feeling is also a kind of fear of letting go that all founders and entrepreneurs have, where it's like, it's your thing and you created this thing and it's hard to let go and let other people take the helm.
Yeah. And there's also things that go wrong,
mm-hmm.
right?
And you feel like you need to jump in.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm not going to hear your details, but like there's things that when you're not as involved, things go wrong. When you're not around as much, sometimes because there's miscommunication, sometimes because I, as a founder, have a bad memory and I'm not talking to people as much, I give bad guidance. things go wrong. When you have a gap year, stuff breaks. And that's just, I think, the price of admission to doing something like this. And you have to get comfortable with that, but it's also kind of hard sometimes. No. Especially when you naturally tend towards perfection, which is, I can be a perfectionist, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Hadn't picked up on
that. I know, it's probably going to surprise you.
The things you learn from late night podcasts in Munich.
I know. I've been married for, 16 years, and you're learning so much about me today.
I know. I think I'm the one plying you with alcohol.
I think we're out. We are out. This is the last beer. That's right.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to Alex from OG.com, which is a high-end and very cool beauty brand. I actually got to know Alex recently at an event in Florida. And here's what he had to say about his experience with our private community for 7 and 8-figure store owners.
I've been really amazed and surprised how great the community is and how much I like the people in the group personally, but also professionally inspired by them, and how many super successful entrepreneurs and businesses there are in the group in such a wide variety of niches and specialties, like things I never even thought of that could be a business are people have these super massive, multi-9-figure businesses going for these products and services. So I think just being this group of people that are really inspiring and have experience going through a lot of the struggles and successes that we've gone through as business owners ourselves, or I have personally, and to kind of have that support and encouragement and someone to, once I've made some personal connections in the group, especially to reach out to and ask questions about, I found kind of subject matter experts on various parts of a business that I can now, that I trust, I know they've done it themselves, and I can reach out to them for advice and vice versa.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7 or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show.
So what are some of the practices that you want to take from this gap year and pull it into your regular year work-wise?
Yeah, I would say...
Or life-wise.
On the business side, I'd say, like I mentioned earlier, it was hard but also good to see a lot of what I was doing wasn't that critical to the business, right? My role as the founder and as the owner is to help with strategy and vision and kind of high-level relationships and direction and marketing. I was inserting myself into a lot of other things, probably. So the things I'm going to try to do my best, if I can marry the best of the sabbatical work with the real work kind of schedule that we're getting ready to go back into, I would say doing less, inserting myself less into parts of the business I don't need to be in, fewer calls and meetings. I took my call volume and meeting volume probably dropped by 90%. And it wasn't that big of a deal.
I know. What does that say about the amount of
calls? I know. Right? And so I think that's a big one. And granted, relationships are important in business. And, we run a community. And so it's really important. But even still, I think there's a lot of calls and meetings and things that weren't, especially with non-members, that could be reconsidered. Doing fewer email. I have also done less email by necessity. And that old kind of cliche that the more email you do, the more email you do because you send it off, people reply, is really true. So those are the big things I think that I'll be trying to do and take into the next kind of real, once work starts scaling back up in the normal year.
Those are good.
Yeah. Anything else on the kids, on how you thought they changed or grew or do you think it was... You think it was good for the kids this year? Obviously, they had some fun adventures, but...
Oh, hands down, yeah.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of growth from, one of our kids that we mentioned was had some trepidation about travel and just being in big crowds, and like that has abated. And we just, you know, probably immersion therapy. We just had her in a lot of different places and they get used to it. Watching our oldest just really blossom into someone who embraces travel.
She loves it so much.
Yeah, she's so good at it and is really friendly with locals and just has embraced it full-heartedly. And that's been really fun to see. So yeah, and I think they've all changed from having done this, but in good ways. What about you?
I think so. There's a few things, like some of our kids were just ecstatic to be out of school. Some of our kids really missed it.
Yeah. Friends.
Yeah, and friends, and kind of, and we, you know, bounced around a little bit. But yeah, I think in general it was definitely worth it for the kids, and I think they'd say so too. All right, it's getting late. We got a train to catch kind of early in the morning. So two last questions here. Looking forward, we're getting ready to kind of go back into the real world, quote unquote, once we get home. What do you want to keep? What kind of changes do you want to make in life going forward? I mentioned a few about business, right? Mm-hmm. But just in life in general, what kind of things do you want to try to keep in our life or make changes of outside of this gap year, kind of on a permanent basis?
I think intentionality with time is one.
Yeah.
That it's something we've always strived for, but with varying degrees of success. And I think traveling kind of makes you do that. And it'd be nice to be successful in that at home as well.
Yeah.
You know, just being more intentional with your time and not letting it fill up with all this busy stuff that some of it you really deeply care about and some of it you don't. You
yeah.
know? Mm-hmm. And before you know it, your week is gone. I think we've had a lot of really good intentional time traveling and even just like longer, better discussions at dinners, things like that kind of come from the pace of travel that I would like to keep.
When you say intentional with your time, what do you mean? Like, what kind of stuff do you want to do less of or be more intentional about doing?
Yeah, I
like
think...
Like, more homeschool? Like... Sorry.
Love the kids, but not more homeschool. I would say, yeah, just not letting your schedule get packed with a whole bunch of kind of random one-off things that really don't impact your relationships or your key relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
protecting time for relationships that are really important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we have three kids. Just there's a lot of stuff. Just modern life is busy.
Yeah. They're in activities. It's already busy before you add in anything else.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing you and I have talked about too, is just really trying to dramatically prioritize the key relationships, family, close friends, and making sure that those get watered really regularly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the things I love the most, and I don't know if we can keep this or not, from the gap here, is just the pace. Like, I will say it's a little frustrating that homeschool often took half the day or more, mm-hmm. and like our time got just cut in half. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I did love was the pace of mornings was so wonderful.
How are you going to keep that?
We're not... back in school. That's going to be hard. That is going to be really hard. I think...
Just tell their teacher, sorry, they're going to be late 2 hours every day.
It's not going to work. We won't be able to keep that. But that was a wonderful thing because the kids slept well.
Yeah.
We had calm mornings. We had time together. We didn't have to just sprint off like a bunch of crazy people. One thing I've talked to you about, we read this book called, it's The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And one of the things he tries to convince people about is taking like the idea of an old-fashioned Sabbath on Sundays or, you know, just once during the week. And that's one thing I want to do with our family.
You mentioned that.
Yeah, is try to do that regularly, where we take a day where we rest, we spend a lot of time with each other. You know, our faith is important to us, so spend time focused on that. Spend time just enjoying having people over, doing things that are recharging, taking a break from like buying stuff. You know, just kind of doing a lot of things that are deeply important, but also slow the pace down and are very relational. And if we can try to do that, I think that's going to be really difficult, but it's something from an aspirational perspective, I'd love to try to do a better job of that this coming year. And maybe that's the way maybe we won't get the mornings, but maybe we can do that. So.
I like that.
Yeah. All right. Last thing. What advice would you give to people who are thinking about doing this?
Bring your roller bag.
Bring.
All the way. No. That's a dig at Andrew because. Our first leg of the trip to Asia, he insisted on having these giant turtle backpacks because of the image of the carefree,
it was not the image. It was mostly not the image. I was thinking mostly not. I did have the idea. I've always traveled with backpacks.
Yes.
I love the idea of the flexibility that if you go, you know, get into a street where you have to climb the fire escape ladder to get into the, I don't know. I like the idea of just not having to worry about the surfaces that you're on. But you were right. It was kind of a, herding five of us was already challenging.
Yes.
And then add these massive, you know, things that.
Turtle shells
that smack into people with unaware kids.
In very crowded subways. Yeah. It was
anyway, lovely. So you convinced me, you were pushing hard for the roller bag.
The carry-on size.
The carry-on like roller suitcase. You got one for this trip. At the last minute, I decided to try it. And I got to say, you were 1,000%. It's so nice. It's so nice.
It's so satisfying to see you not complaining about back pain.
As someone who thought I was really dialed in on my travel game, it's embarrassing how wrong I was.
And then the few times we have had to, you know, climb some stairs, so you get your workout in.
Yeah. You need to do like, you know, suitcase curls as you walk up the subway. Okay, yeah. So okay. That definitely headlines it. Get a roller suitcase. But apart from that, any tips for people thinking about doing this?
I think everyone knows kind of the strengths and enjoyments of their own family members. And I think really building a trip around what you and your family members enjoy and gives you the most satisfaction is important, because just checking off a bunch of tourist hotspots is not going to make it as memorable as, like, for us, it was going into the Black Forest and letting our kids gorge themselves silly on blackberries and raspberries. And then, you know, you kind of know what kind of things your family likes. And so I think the other advice I would have is, if you know people living abroad or even, you know, kind of remotely have some connections, it's really nice to have somebody local who knows the city well to show you around.
Yeah.
Because it makes the experience so much better. So that would be my other advice. What about you?
Yeah, those are great. I'd say a couple of things. I'd say, obviously, we spent more money this year than we normally would have. But I think it is not quite as expensive as people would think.
Mm.
Like, I've been looking, we tend to put all of our expenses on a credit card and pay it off every month. And I've been tracking our credit card on the road. And again, we're spending more than we would, but not as much as I thought, because we're not buying groceries. Mm-hmm. We're not buying a bunch of random crap that we don't need. We're not paying for birthday presents for kids, which is probably 40% of our household budget at this point, like for, you know, for our friends and things.
Oh,
yeah.
It's like, well, we're going to still get birthday presents.
No, a little tongue in cheek. No presents for the kids. But I mean, just all the expenses from daily life.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think that's one thing that I would note. And I think the other thing I would note is, like, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're starting a business, it's a bad time to do it. You're not going to get good work done from the road. But if you've been doing it for a while and you have some level of stability, or you think you can get to at least some level of stability in 6 to 12 months, like, I had a ton to do for the 9 to 12 months leading up to the gap year,
mm-hmm.
to put systems in place, hire new people. And if you just set a time and a date and that kind of lights a fire under you to get it done. So it's possible to do for a lot of people. And I would say, fight the fear of your business will. Is there a chance your business blows up and disappears? Yes. Is that fear that you have potentially larger? And it's been, I want to say too, like, it's been a hard year for people in e-commerce. And I want to acknowledge that. Like, it's been, I feel a little bad that we took this gap year on a particularly hard year for the e-commerce industry, and that, yeah, we had planned it out as important enough. We just did it. But so I know this does not apply to everyone, and especially a lot of people who are having a rough go of it this year. But if you're in a place where you do have some level of stability and you're kind of wondering about it, but you want to do it, but there's that fear that's there, I just encourage you to do it, because it's a good chance things won't end up as badly as you think. It's a good chance your business, you maybe find out things in your business that you don't need to be a part of, like I did. And it's something you'll remember for a really, really long time. You make amazing memories, and it's worth the cost, I would say, and it's worth the risk. And I'm a betting man. Would you say I'm risk adverse? What do you say, am I on the risk spectrum?
Yeah, you lean risk adverse.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think it's worth it. So
it definitely is. Yeah, and the cost of being on the road and ordering meals, it was hard for me at first because I don't like spending money on myself.
Yes.
And I definitely don't like spending money on food and things that I know that I could do myself. But yeah, I think it was good to let go of that to some extent on this trip and just say, we're going to spend some money because we're traveling. And when we get back, we can buckle down. That was really helpful for me because then I didn't feel guilty. I didn't worry about it every single time. I ordered the extra Radler if I needed to, and life was good.
Like if you had a podcast coming up?
Like if I had this nerve-wracking podcast coming up.
Yeah. Radlers, if I'd never heard about Radlers. They're like, were they lemonade with like a tiny amount of alcohol in them? How would you describe them?
Yeah, they're kind of a fruitier version of beer.
Yeah. So it's terrible.
But you liked it.
Actually, they were good. They were good. I've heard the White Claws, so the White Claws are terrible.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thank you for doing this.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Was this as bad as you thought it was going to be? We could go for another hour if you want.
Yeah. I appreciate the work. Like voice actors are being replaced by AI. So I'm really glad that you hired me to replace your wife. That was great.
Oh, this sounds really weird. This is very creepy. We do an amazing impression of her if you're not her. So if you are thinking about doing this, you have questions, if we can be helpful talking about packing, homeschooling, itineraries, running the business on the road, anything like that, let me know. If you're in the community, of course, you can reach out PM or email me, andrew@ecommercefuel.com. Or if you want to go hold of Annie, what's the best email for you?
annie.udarian@gmail.com.
Reach out to either of us. Happy to help with anything. And also big thanks to the ECF members who were kind enough to meet up on the road. James and Pedro in Lisbon, got to meet up with them. James runs melonoptics.com. Pedro runs blankysleep.com. To Aunt Tia and James who run keepgoingfirstaid.com here in Munich. To Ken who runs Deluxe in Singapore. So thank you all for being able to meet up on the road. And also if you're in ECF, I mean, one of the benefits of having a community like this is, I mean, obviously a huge conflict of interest and shamelessly self-promotional perhaps, but being able to just reach out to people either internationally or if you're in the US where most of our members are, drop into a city and just be able to connect with people is really cool. It's always fun talking to locals. It's always fun talking business. And so that's been a great part. And if you're traveling, make sure you take advantage of that because it was a really cool part of the trip. So thank you to them. And then again, thank you to the ECF team for helping make it happen. I leaned on them so heavily this whole year and looking forward to getting back after it. Thank you to everyone at Community. I've kind of been MIA a little bit apart from the podcast. And so looking forward to diving in with full force. And ECF Live is coming up, which I'm very excited about, to Mosman. And yeah, thank you to you, especially for not leaving me after the bait and switch on homeschooling, for being up for this kind of crazy adventure 2 or 3 years out. And it's been a really fun year. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for planning this. It's been great.
If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.